This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus is praising Italy for what he called bold, courageous steps aimed at slowing the spread of the coronavirus and protecting their country. As VOA's Lattice Ahok reports, around the globe, countries continue to assess what steps they need to take as the virus spreads.
The Italian government on Sunday imposed travel restrictions on some 16 million people in the north. The virus has now reached the U.S. capital, Washington, and the surrounding area. First cases have been reported in Bulgaria and Afghanistan. The latest reports from China are good and bad. A hotel used as quarantine in the coastal city of Guangzhou collapsed Saturday, killing 10 people and trapping more than 70 in the rubble. Officials reported on Sunday that the number of new cases has dropped. Among those discharged from a makeshift hospital in Wuhan is a 101-year-old man. The central Chinese city is the epicenter of the outbreak that has infected more than 100,000 people worldwide and killed more than 3,000. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Undeterred by the outbreak, North Korea is conducting business as usual, VOA's Bill Gallo explains.
North Korea test-fired 3 short-range rockets Monday. It's the second North Korean launch in a week and the latest mixed signal from Pyongyang, which has hinted it wants international help to fight the coronavirus. South Korean officials say the North used multiple rocket launchers to fire the short-range weapons into the sea off Korea's east coast. Japan said they appeared to be ballistic missiles. North Korea's second missile launch in a week may signal a return to tensions, except the North is also hinting at dialogue. In a surprise move last week, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un sent a letter of condolence to South Korea, which has seen an explosion of coronavirus cases. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
And this is VOA News. Afghanistan's president-elect Ashraf Ghani and his election rival runner-up Abdullah Abdullah are preparing for parallel swearing-in ceremonies Monday, fueling political tensions and posing a fresh challenge to U.S.-led peace efforts. The Afghan Election Commission late last month declared incumbent Ghani the winner of the bitterly contested September 28th presidential election. But Abdullah, the incumbent chief executive, rejected the outcome as fraudulent, claiming that he and his team had won the vote and threatened to form his own government. California Senator Kamala Harris, who dropped out of the race for the Democratic presidential nomination back in December, is the sixth rival to now endorse former Vice President Joe Biden Sunday. But as VOA's Michael Sullivan reports, the remaining opponent, U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders, is still putting up a fight for the nomination.
Joe Biden rallied supporters in Missouri, coming off wins last week that let him reclaim the lead in the Democratic race. Missouri will hold a party preference contest Tuesday, along with Michigan, Idaho, Mississippi, North Dakota, and Washington State. Bernie Sanders campaigned in Illinois, where Democrats will go to the polls on March 17th in another key primary. Major rivals have quit the race, and many have endorsed Biden. It's not surprising, Sanders told ABC this week on Sunday.
What was very clear from the media narrative and what the establishment wanted was to make sure that people coalesced around Biden and tried to defeat me.
Biden says that Sanders, who calls himself a Democratic socialist, is too extreme to build a winning coalition. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said Sunday that he will meet with European Union officials in Brussels Monday to discuss an influx of migrants in Turkey. As migrants from Syria continue to cross into Turkey, Erdogan has said that Ankara can no longer abide by the 2016 law that prevents migrants in Turkey from traveling into the European Union. According to the 2016 deal, the EU was supposed to provide Turkey with some $6.8 billion to finance housing and education of migrants, but Ankara says it has received no money. On Saturday, Ankara offered one positive gesture, as officials announced they would no longer allow migrants to reach Greece through the Aegean Sea because of the safety concerns, but it has put no similar restrictions on its land borders with Bulgaria and Greece, where days of clashes between migrants and Greek border guards are exacerbating tensions. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today's Monday, March the 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi police Sunday arrested two senior members of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition in an apparent crackdown.
It's an issue that has been received as one of those political connected arrests, mindful of the fact that the arrests have just come an hour after the president had made those remarks here in Lilongwe.
Makumbo Mutale is a Malawi governor's commentator. Uganda police denied targeted arrest against Bobby Wine's People Power Movement. A Cameroon separatist spokesperson denies responsibility for Sunday's attack on a village in a French-speaking region of the country. And a former Liberian president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, launches a center to groom African women in leadership.
This center will be a catalyst to get them to be more committed, more energized in taking and promoting leadership, intentional leadership.
Cameroon women march on Sunday on International Women's Day to demand their rights, and we'll have a report on domestic violence in Kenya. Those stories plus Samson Omale Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawi police on Sunday arrested two senior members of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition in an apparent crackdown. Police arrested Gift Trapens, the group's vice president, along with the executive member, McDonald Sembereka. The group had announced to hold a protest at State House on March the 25th. The arrest came soon after President Peter Mutharika spoke at a rally in Blantyre, threatening to deal with the group if they went ahead with their protest to make what he called Malawi ungovernable. Police were Sunday said to be looking for the group's chairperson, Timothy Ntambo. Malawi Governor's commentator Makumbo Mutale says the arrests are politically motivated.
These civil society leaders had actually organized a demonstration that they wanted to march to the State House on 25th March. What they had indicated to say is that if the president does not assent the bills which parliament has passed to necessitate that we have the elections, then they'll proceed with the march and they're going to shut down the State House. So the president today actually in the rally, and several speakers who spoke at this political rally, they actually took tough against Mr. Ntambo, the chairperson of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, Mr. Trumpist, Mr. Biremaya and McDonald Sembereka, that he's going to order the police and the army actually to use force when they're going to have their demonstrations. So it's an issue that has been received as one of those political connected arrests, mindful of the fact that the arrests have just come an hour after the president had made those remarks here in Lilongwe.
We tried to reach Mr. Ntambo, president of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition. For some reason, we could not reach him. What do you know about him?
Mr. Ntambo, basically, as we know currently, the police actually, they have a warrant of arrest that they want to effect, and is one of them. But what we know as of now is that they are yet to arrest him. So definitely, maybe he might be in hiding, because as you're aware, these arrests are happening at night, and that there have been all these political speeches that have accompanied these arrests. So there's a lot of suspicion in terms of danger by many Malawians to say Mr. Sembereka and Mr. Trump that have been arrested, as they have been transferred to Blantyre, another city. Will there not be harm that will happen to them?
As you mentioned, the Human Rights Defenders Coalition were planning to hold a rally on March 25th, but these arrests are also coming ahead this week. I think the Supreme Court is supposed to rule on the challenge made by President Mutharika on the Constitutional Court's decision. Is that correct?
Exactly. So on Wednesday, the Supreme Court will be sitting actually to hear the appeal that President Mutharika made, and as well as the Malawi Electoral Commission, against the ruling of the Constitutional Court. Because I think President Mutharika has made it very clear that he was not happy with the ruling by the Constitutional Court, and I think he has been really coming very hard against the Constitutional Court. So maybe these are one of those tactics that the president and the current regime might be taking in order to put fear in the activists, especially as they are now also preparing for the demonstrations.
Has there been any particular charges announced against, say, Mr. Trapens and the others?
So far, no charge has been actually announced about the arrest of Sembeck and Mr. Trump. And this is what is really making people to raise a lot of questions. But then I think I have also make it clear that it's not the first time the two have been arrested. During the time when they were also organizing demonstrations, after they had organized some demonstrations, they were also arrested. But then it was linked to an issue that had to do with the issue around how they had misappropriated some donor funds, I think related to HIV/AIDS. And at that particular time, then they were given bail. So it was one of those charges that government used to say they've been implicated in the misappropriation of the funds, but they used as a way of silencing them because of their stance in actually leading the demonstration.
Makumbo Mutale is Malawi Governor's commentator. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. Uganda's opposition pressure group, the People Power Movement, says at least 50 of its supporters have been arrested and detained by police in recent weeks. Joel Senyonyi, the spokesperson of the group, says some of those arrested have been denied access to their lawyers, but the police denies targeting the People Power Movement supporters. Mugumi Davis Rakarinchi reports from Kampala.
Senyonyi, People Power spokesperson, says many of their supporters were arrested in the last 2 weeks. He claims some of the arrested supporters have been tortured and were denied access to legal representation.
Yeah, we had about 22 who were arrested in the east, taken to a place called Nalufenya, a notorious place for torture. Other people were arrested from within several parts of the country. We have been pushing. Some have been released this particular week. Others are still in detention. Some we know where they are. Of course, they're being denied access to their lawyers. Others, we don't even know where they are.
The People Power Movement is a political pressure group led by popular parliamentarian and artist Robert Chagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine. Chagulanyi was cleared by the Electoral Commission to go ahead and make countrywide consultations on his mission to contest for the presidency of Uganda. The elections are expected sometime next year, but many times Chagulanyi's attempts to make consultations have been interrupted by the police, saying he does not follow the necessary procedures.
It's difficult times, but we're a lot more resolute than ever before. Even these comrades that are detained and so on, they're strong, and they know that now more than ever, they must keep at this fight to see that we see transition.
Senyonyi accuses the police of being used by the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, whose leader, President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni, has been in power for more than 30 years. Uganda police spokesperson Fred Enanga denies the police were arresting people based on their political affiliation.
We are colorblind. We don't go by color because this one is yellow, red, blue. No, we categorically evaluate the evidence and where we find people have been conflict of crime and the offenses are arrestable and punishable, then we go ahead and arrest these people, but not based on color.
Enanga is tasking the People Power to produce a list of their supporters that they claim to have been arrested. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
A spokesperson for Cameroon's Ambazonia separatist movement is denying responsibility for Sunday's reported attack on a village in the French-speaking region of the country. The Associated Press reports that the separatist attacked a security post in the village of Galim, killing at least 7 people. But Chris Anu, Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed Ambazonian Republic, says Ambazonian fighters only deny they defend their territory and do not launch cross-border attacks.
There is a French-Cameroon movement that is created out of Paris that has taken responsibility of that attack. Ambazonians have no reason crossing our boundaries, going over to La République du Cameroun to wage a war. We are defending our territory and nothing more.
Are you saying, Chris, that there is another group of separatists from the French-speaking Cameroon side?
I don't know what you refer to as separatists. Ambazonians, we do not consider ourselves separatists. We are restorationists. The other group that has taken responsibility of this act consider themselves a nationalist movement of Cameroon. The group was created in Paris. They are called Brigade Anti-Sardinade. It's a French-Cameroon nationalist movement created out of Paris and based all over the diaspora.
But aren't they part of your movement?
They are not part of our movement. They don't believe in the independence for the Southern Cameroon. We have nothing in common.
If it is true they carry out these attacks, is this something that you welcome?
We do not appreciate the killing, the shedding of innocent blood. And so, of course, we do not condone it. We do not support it. However, we think that if the regime in French Cameroon were to settle the problems in its house, they will not have this situation where they have their own citizens attacking their own institutions and leading to the shedding of blood.
What is the way out of here? Some of the political people have spoken about maybe they need a federation to solve this problem instead of through the barrel of the gun.
That is a wrong prescription, James. Our people have not been killed, our children slaughtered and buried in mass graves, our villages and towns decimated with fire. For us to get to a federation that we asked for from the beginning of this struggle, that was the demand in 2016. They refused it and they called us names, two cubes of sugar, Biafra, Anglo fools, and so on and so on. This has now dragged on for going to 4 years, and we have had over 12,000 of our people killed, close to 1 million living in the displaced settlements, and over 100,000 as refugees. Why should we settle for anything less than a free and independent Southern Cameroon? No, we are looking for nothing, nothing but a free, independent Ambazonia.
Chris Anius, the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed Ambazonian Separatist Movement of Cameroon, who is speaking with us from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. Today is Monday, March 9th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. Women across the world celebrated International Women's Day yesterday, Sunday. Ahead of the day, former Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf gathered women leaders from across the world in Monrovia to launch a special initiative that she said will groom women leadership across Africa. Sirleaf, Africa's first elected woman president, launched the Ellen Johnson Sirleaf Presidential Center for Women and Development. She explains the purpose of the center to reporter Moses Gaziewo.
Its objectives are to bring women leaders together, to share experiences, to be able to raise their profiles, to come together in perfecting their strategies, their plans, to recognize what leadership means, the responsibilities and the rewards from leadership. And in this, we hope to create a wave of women who, as a result of their commitment and accomplishment in leadership, will move to even higher levels, will be able to have more influence in the exercise of their leadership.
Madam President, what have you seen? I said that since you left political office 2 years ago, things aren't going too well with women exerting themselves. That's why you're launching an initiative as such.
First of all, I don't think it's really totally true that women have not been exerting themselves. Very true that in terms of the progress of women, in one or two places, there have been some decline in achieving the goals that have been set. I also pointed out that a part of this may be affected by the fact that democracy itself is under threat, and women tend to thrive and do better in democracies. But what this is, this center will be a catalyst to get them to be more committed, more energized, more active in taking and promoting leadership, intentional leadership, unabashedly. So they're going for leadership, they're going to claim it in every way they can and help other women to also exercise the same amount of claim in all areas of public service in every country.
That was former Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf speaking with reporter Moses Gaziewo in Monrovia. 40% of married women in Kenya have reported being victims of either domestic violence or sexual abuse. The Wikimedia Foundation says low level of education, religion, and socioeconomic status were the main causes of domestic violence in Kenya. And as the world celebrated International Women's Day yesterday, Sunday, Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi on a Kenyan woman who is a survivor of domestic violence and also a pioneer of non-governmental organization that helps women who survive domestic violence.
The statistics seem to be increasing day by day as the rate of murder cases, especially among married couples, are on the rise in Kenya. On Friday, 19th April 2013, Diana Kamande, a mother of two and a survivor of domestic violence, becomes a widow. This was after a 10-year love story turned sorrowful. The late husband came home, cut her with a machete, threatens to kill the kids, and finally kills himself after the kids and Diana are rescued.
I'm in disbelief. My husband can do this to me. By the time I come to realize I need to hide, he had cut me for 21 times on my head. Yeah, he was cutting me. You know, I'm seated, I'm asking him questions, and he's cutting me. It's when now the reality dawns on to me. When I'm full of blood, my nightdress is full of blood. The bedroom is a pool of blood. I decide to hide under the bed. Pretend I'm dead, keep quiet, stop screaming.
As if cutting her was not enough, Diana's late husband calls his parents and in-laws to inform them about the incident, reminding them that they should buy a coffin and prepare for burial arrangements. Diana says at this time she's over bleeding and still running to save the children who are screaming for help.
He tells my dad, I've killed your daughter and I'm going to kill your grandchildren and kill myself.
Diana is rescued and taken to hospital. The nerves are damaged in her head. She goes for surgery. Immediately she leaves the theater room. A police officer in waiting for her to write a statement because the husband had killed himself. Diana now has a case to answer. She's charged of murder she never committed.
On our way out, my husband tells me, go die in the hospital, I'm going to die here. So I was taken to theater. After almost 7 hours, thank God I came out. Then the first phone call is he killed himself. The next person I meet coming from theater, find a police officer. You're expected to write a statement of what transpired.
After 2 months of recuperating in hospital, she's discharged. Before she heals of the scars and psychological torture, she is handed a charge sheet. At this time, she has a murder case to answer. The employer releases her from work. She becomes desperate. The future is dimmed. But while in court, Diana wins the case. The desperate situation gives Diana the zeal to look for other women who face domestic violence, as well as widows in the society. Through her initiative of the non-governmental organization, the government supports the women. She grew the number from 15 to 1.4 million nationwide.
I decided to register an NGO, and now the women could organize them into a manageable number of 20s. Other widows seeing this, and even other vulnerable women who had gone through violence, when they saw this, they started now calling. Government now became a partner.
That was Maureen Ojiambo reporting from Nairobi, Kenya. On the occasion of International Women's Day yesterday, more than 20,000 Cameroon women from rural and urban areas assembled in the capital, Yaoundé, to press for their rights to education and decision-making while urging a stop to early marriages and harmful traditional practices. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
All across the nations, all around the world,
a group of women at the Central Market in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, sing that they, like their peers all over Africa, are longing to be freed from the bondage of strong traditional practices that impede their emancipation and well-being. Among them is female activist Emanuela Mokake of the NGO Cameroon Women for Participation in Development. Mokake says her NGO is working to change the perception that women should only bring up babies, carry out domestic chores, and work in farms.
Women have realized that they are no more compelled to endure domestic violence because it hampers on their human rights. Women are setting out now to say, no, enough of this battery. If any man beats a woman, the law under assault and battery clearly handles that.
Mokake said they were asking Cameroon to ratify the Maputo Protocol on the Rights of Women in Africa, which it signed in 2006, and respect the UN Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. The tens of thousands of women gathered Sunday in Yaoundé said they were unhappy that strong traditional practices still encourage female genital mutilation and early marriages. Marie-Thérèse Abena-Ondua, Cameroon Minister of Women's Empowerment and the Family, says in spite of the challenges, much has been done to respect the issue as there are 58 women in the 180-member lower house of parliament and 36 women are mayors in the country that has over 380 councils.
Clearly, if women have to move forward, they need the support of men. Women are capable, and women have also dared because many of them were not even brave enough to postulate. The environment is not friendly. Tradition has to change. We keep good tradition, but we should give up the bad traditions.
Ondua said the government was taking all necessary measures to improve access to education for women and girls, with a particular focus on rural areas and by carrying out public awareness-raising campaigns. Moki Edwin Kinzaka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with the CAF Champions League, where all the four semi-finalists have emerged in the 2019-2020 CAF Champions League after the second leg quarterfinal matches were concluded this past weekend. Raja Casablanca reached the semi-finals after a 15-year absence, despite losing 1-0 away to TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo, as they won the first leg 2-0 at home. Wydad scraped through 2-1 on aggregate, despite losing 1-0 at Etoile du Sahel of Tunisia. On Friday, Zamalek of Egypt knocked out defending champions Esperance of Tunisia, falling 1-0 in Tunis to an early penalty, but going through 3-2 on aggregate. Al Ahly of Egypt avenged a humiliating loss to Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa last season by drawing 1-1 in Pretoria on Saturday to qualify for the semi-finals, 3-1 on aggregate. The two-leg semi-finals during May will pit Cairo and Casablanca clubs against each other, with Raja facing Zamalek and Wydad Casablanca tackling Al Ahly of Egypt. In the CAF Confederations Cup, Nigerian heavyweight Enyimba bowed out of the competition after they were beaten 2-0 away to Guinean club Horia AC in Conakry to secure a 3-1 aggregate triumph. Debutant Pyramid FC reached the semi-finals of the Confederations Cup after beating Zambia's Zanaco 3-1 on aggregate on Sunday. In the other matches played, Hassania Agadir defeated El Nasri of Libya 2-0 thanks to a penalty from Karim El Bakoui and a last-grab goal from Rede Atasi to advance as comprehensive 7-0 aggregate winners. On a rather sad note, a football player in the Nigerian Professional Football League who plays for Nasra United, Chineme Martins, died on Sunday after slumping in their Nigerian Professional Football League tie against Northern-based side Katsina United. An eyewitness who was at the stadium said the late defender was standing alone when he slumped around the 45th minute. His team had been awarded a free kick and he was standing alone in their own half when he suddenly collapsed. Other players informed the referee and he was eventually rushed to the hospital where he was pronounced dead. In other news, Nigerian-born mixed martial art athlete Israel Adesanya defended his middleweight title with a unanimous decision win over Olympic wrestling medalist Yoel Romero at UFC 248 in Las Vegas on Sunday. In a cagey tactical contest that lacked the excitement many fans anticipated, Nigerian-born New Zealander Adesanya peppered the 42-year-old Cuban with powerful leg kicks to take victory on the scorecards. The bout started almost at a complete standstill, with Romero static in the middle of the octagon holding a high guard. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, March 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free, pan-African music of the highest caliber. We'll be right back. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.